Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, January 12, 2017. The deputy spokesman for the South Sudan Army is accusing the armed opposition and some members of the troika countries of plotting a regime change in South Sudan.
The so-called international experts on South Sudan and this present team for regime change in South Sudan, of course they will still fail because they have not yet gotten the right person.
And the Human Rights World Report for 2017 mentions South Sudan.
The African Union has offered to create a so-called mixed international national tribunal for South Sudan in order to address the mass war crimes that have taken place there, but we've seen no progress in that.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan's army alleges that representatives of the United States, the United Kingdom, and Norway held a secret meeting with members of the country's armed opposition led by a former SPLA general in Kenya earlier this month with a view towards changing the regime in Juba. The deputy spokesman for South Sudan Army says any plan for regime change in South Sudan will fail because only the South Sudanese people can change their government through elections. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan's deputy military spokesman Colonel Santo Dominic Chol charges that the representatives from the United States, the United Kingdom, Norway, and a SPLA in opposition faction loyal to former first Vice President Riek Machar, led by Lieutenant General Bapin Montchelwe Jang, met in Nairobi to discuss a regime change in Juba. The British government flatly denies the allegation. In a statement, the British embassy in Juba says the article in the East African newspaper by Fred Oluch is, quote, a fabrication that does not reflect the policy of the British government, end quote. Chol alleges that the participants at the Nairobi meeting decided to use the ongoing economic crisis to affect regime change. He says they agreed to inject huge amounts of money to the armed oppositions to bribe SPLA junior officers so that they would isolate themselves from Chief of Staff General Paul Malong and President Salva Kiir's administration. Chol claims the meeting identifies ways to sabotage the South Sudan Army leadership that would create mistrust between President Kiir and Malong and possibly lead to Malong's replacement. Chol says no one will change the Kiir administration except the people of South Sudan.
How does the SPLA look or describe this team, which is calling itself a team for regime change in South Sudan? First of all, how many teams that have been there to change the regime in South Sudan? I think the only authorized people that can change the regime in South Sudan in the upcoming election are the people of South Sudan. It's not anybody beyond the borders of this country.
Colonel Chol says the purpose of the alleged plan for regime change is to divide South Sudan's ethnic groups and prevent the country from developing. Chol alleged that the meeting also recommended the assassination of Malong either by poisoning, a stage-managed traffic accident, or a plane crash.
In their first meeting, they concluded that the quest for regime change in South Sudan wouldn't be possible completely in the presence of Malong, because Malong, of course, is known for his support to the people of South Sudan and to the democratically elected leadership of this country. Therefore, it is actually very difficult to talk about regime change in this country unless the first strategy is to eliminate Malong physically.
Chol alleges that participants decided if all this failed, officials would mobilize the support of the permanent members of the UN Security Council to approve a secret indictment against the SPLA Chief of Staff Paul Malong, General Gabriel Jock Riak, Salvador Garang Mabior, and Information Minister Michael Makwe. Chol says that plan will also not work.
To me, it looks like the so-called international experts on South Sudan and this present team for regime change in South Sudan, of course they will still fail because they have not yet gotten the right person.
Chol claims the next meeting by the United States, Britain, Norway, and rebel representatives led by Lieutenant General Bapini will be held on January 23rd in New York. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
The World Economic Forum has released a new report outlining the top trends that could shape global developments over the next 10 years. About 750 experts contributed to the 2017 Global Risks Report. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports from Washington.
The report's been released in advance of the World Economic Forum, which opens in Davos, Switzerland, January 17th. It addresses what it calls a persistent cluster of societal and economic risks that could spill over into real-world disruption. Angus Collins is the author of the Global Risks Report. He says income inequality and polarization are among the biggest drivers of global risk.
And I think in the context of some of the political developments we saw in 2016, I think it's clear that these issues are increasingly to the fore and will represent a challenge for politicians across the world. I think there's a lot of focus on certain Western countries, and there were big results, obviously, in the US and UK. But polarization is a growing challenge, and I think 2016 was a wake-up call.
The report also says environmental issues will dominate the landscape, especially following the historic climate agreement reached in Paris.
2016 was a very positive year in terms of policy steps, building on the Paris Agreement in 2015. But the situation remains acute. And looking at the survey results, the Global Risks Report this year highlights the fact that four of the five environment-related risks, they're up in the high likelihood, high impact. Environmental risks really stand out this year more so than ever before.
He says global risks are increasingly complex and interconnected.
We see this across the board. I think technology is a key area. The impact of technology on our economies via labor markets is having, in some areas, profound social and political effects. I think we also can look at geopolitics. The impact of environmental factor risks on geopolitics, the impact of technology, cyber attacks on geopolitics.
Collins says such risks require governments to quickly adapt to new situations.
With this interconnectedness, it's not possible for governments alone or for businesses alone to meet the new challenges. It's all about agility, multi-stakeholder approaches, and that's forming a big part of what the forum is doing.
He says the overarching theme of this year's World Economic Forum is responsive and responsible leadership. Collins says that needs to be applied to economic growth.
The global recovery since the global financial crisis has been one of the weakest on record, and there's a clear need for new thinking in terms of how do we revive robust rates of growth. But second, I think reviving growth isn't enough. So another key focus of the annual meeting at Davos will be looking at the economic fundamentals, how market capitalism works. And I think there will be a lot of discussion around the need for reform for new, more inclusive models of growth.
The report warns of the risks of what it calls the fourth industrial revolution, which includes the use of robotics and artificial intelligence.
We don't quite understand them all yet, let alone have the norms or institutions to manage them and to ensure that the world can yield the benefits of all this technological change while also mitigating the clear potential for adverse impacts.
The author of the Global Risks 2017 report says the Davos summit will also focus on strengthening collaboration to deal with the growing trends over the next decade. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
The strike by English-speaking professionals in Cameroon has taken another turn, with the government shutting down an independent radio station. The station hosted a discussion of what the striking lawyers and teachers say is the overuse of French in the bilingual country. Muki Edwin Kinzeka has the story for VOA from Yaoundé.
Radio Hot Coco is based in Bamenda in Cameroon's northwest region, the center of the strike by English-speaking lawyers and educators. Authorities sealed the station's offices Thursday after a call-in program in which participants criticized the government over its handling of striking professionals' grievances. VOA reached the manager of Radio Hot Cocoa, Gideon Tucker, by phone.
The governor's office accused us of broadcasting information that would incite the public to violence, incite the public to hatred, and incite the public to civil disobedience.
Tucker said the region's governor is mad that the show's host took the side of the callers, not the government, during the live debate. Activists say the radio shutdown is part of a wider clampdown on public debate in Cameroon. At least 20 journalists and dozens of media outlets were suspended last year. In December, the Minister of Communication ordered radio and TV stations to stop roundtable discussions and call-in programs. Talk shows on state media that examined topical issues were suspended. As for the strike, English-speaking lawyers and teachers have refused to work since October, effectively bringing the justice and education system to a halt in the northwest and southwest. The situation degenerated in December when youths set fire to police stations and vehicles and burned a national flag. Several hundred people have been arrested. Negotiations to end the strike deadlock over two issues. The government has released about 50 of the people who were detained, but has refused to release them all. And some union leaders called for the English-speaking parts of Cameroon to seek independence. Professor Gogomo Ponmingo, chief government negotiator in the teachers' grievances, wants to get talks back on track.
The government cannot negotiate anything that has to do with the form of the state, but every other thing we can bring to the table. The ad hoc committee, which I head, is still ready to welcome the six leaders of the trade unions who left the hall.
Cameroon is officially a bilingual country, but only about a fifth of the population speaks English. Professionals in Anglophone parts of the country complain that English is being sidelined. For example, they say the government has failed to provide official documents in English as well as French. Teachers are also demanding reforms amid what they say is the proliferation of French-oriented schools. However, the months-long strike has actually pushed some families in affected areas to move their children to French-speaking schools so they won't miss the academic year. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, human rights releases global human rights report for 2017. We'll bring you that report when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's the best part about being an adult?
I can do each and everything I like. I can plan for myself. I can get what I want. Basically, I do what I want at the moment. Yeah, I'm very independent.
Well, having children, the goal of life is to have someone who will be carrying me on as someone who can't die, actually.
One thing is I can make my own decisions. I don't have to be answerable to anyone. I'm only answerable to myself, and I'm responsible for myself.
Independent decision-making, and also having been a head of family, also having knowledge and skill of trying to mentor or train or try to coach others.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. International aid groups have begun to help fight against typhoid outbreak in Zimbabwe. But as Sebastian Muhofu reports from Harare, some stakeholders say President Robert Mugabe's government has not taken the outbreak seriously.
Officials say the waterborne disease, which has struck more than 200 people in Harare, killing two, has been detected in other parts of Zimbabwe. Health Minister David Parirenyatwa is appealing for international assistance, citing help the country received during the major cholera outbreak in 2008.
When we had cholera, I called all the partners, and even other countries came out. Yes, with typhoid, we will be able to welcome and we will invite partners, particularly the usual partners like UNICEF, MSF, and others.
The British charity Oxfam has responded, supplying water treatment chemicals to typhoid-affected areas and deploying volunteers to educate people on ways to avoid the disease. Zimbabwe has been hit hard by waterborne diseases before, most notably a cholera outbreak during the 2008-2009 rainy season that killed more than 4,000 people. In an interview, Fortune Nyamande, the spokesman for the Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights, said the government is not fulfilling the right to health enshrined in the country's constitution.
We're not seeing really tangible action from the Harare State Council. At the central government level, what we're seeing more is more of a blame game. People should concentrate on dealing with typhoid. It is unacceptable for any person to lose his or her life because of typhoid. They are diseases of the 1900s. That's where cholera, typhoid, and so forth would kill people. People should come together, deal with the root cause of typhoid, and the nation should move forward.
Typhoid, an infectious bacterial fever, can be treated with antibiotics, but still kills more than 220,000 people worldwide each year. It can be prevented through improved water and sanitation. In Mbare Township, the epicenter of the current outbreak, sewer water can be seen flowing on the streets and the garbage has gone for days without being collected. After the outbreak began, authorities banned vendors from selling food in Harare. But seller Chennai Mananga says vending is not the cause of typhoid. Garbage is not being collected. Best sewer pipes are not being repaired. It is junk all over, she says. If there's junk, there will be disease outbreak. So it is not vendors' problem, she adds. In some areas, residents say faucets have been dry for days, forcing them to rely on water from open sources like lakes and rivers for daily chores. Those waters are not clean, making it harder to end Zimbabwe's typhoid outbreak. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
The 27th annual World Report was released today in Washington, D.C. by the Human Rights Watch. The report provides a damning look at the major human rights abuses around the world, including Sudan and South Sudan. The 700-page report provides a country-by-country look at the past year with issues like women's rights, recruitment of child soldiers, and lack of press freedoms. Ayen Bior has more for VOA from Washington.
The report says it was a year filled with attacks on civilians, including gang rapes on women and children, and a civil war that destabilized South Sudan's economy and its ability to provide basic services to its population in South Sudan. Kenneth Roth, executive director of Human Rights Watch, told reporters in Washington today that he continues to worry about the citizens of South Sudan.
I think some of you may have seen that just today, you know, despite the South Sudanese government's absolute inability to stop the ethnic and political slaughter, that they are rejecting the UN's offer of 4,000 additional peacekeepers. And this is, you know, South Sudan is one of the most explosive situations in Africa today. It's one where the greatest number of lives, or one of the greatest number of lives, are at stake. And so, you know, we're very worried about the lack of a solution here.
The recruitment and use of child soldiers in South Sudan skyrocketed in 2016, according to the report, citing data from the United Nations. The report says at least 2,500 children took up arms to fight in the country last year, despite agreements signed by the leaders of government forces and the SPLA-IO that they would not recruit children into their ranks. The report says most of the children were recruited by government soldiers. But Roth took a moment to blame U.S. President Barack Obama for not acting swiftly enough to end the three-year conflict.
The Obama administration, frankly, was much too slow to ratchet up the pressure. It was really only in the last couple months that it endorsed an arms embargo. And even to this day, we are not able to get an arms embargo through the UN Security Council. We've seen that even the peacekeepers who have been deployed in South Sudan have been incapable in their current numbers of protecting large numbers of civilians. We've had people slaughtered really, you know, right in front of peacekeepers. And if Juba is not willing to accept these additional peacekeepers, that's a very bad sign.
And Roth noted that the African Union is dragging its feet to implement a hybrid court to try war crimes in South Sudan.
In this case, the African Union has offered to create a so-called mixed international-national tribunal for South Sudan in order to address the mass war crimes that have taken place there. But we've seen no progress in that front. So we're going to need, you know, a number of these steps taken if we're going to curtail what is really a dangerously explosive situation.
Of course, one of the biggest news developments of 2016 was the U.S. elections. With the inauguration of President-elect Donald Trump just over 1 week away, Roth said he's very concerned about the incoming administration.
We see Trump himself speaking in positive terms, you know, about Putin, about Sisi. We saw yesterday, you know, Tillerson, the Secretary of State nominee, refusing to speak in strong terms about Duterte's summary executions that he's encouraging in the Philippines. So, you know, what we're worried about is not simply that, you know, populism exists, that's always been the case, but that it's being reinforced and is spreading very rapidly, even in what had been strongholds of democracy in the West.
Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
The South Sudan Human Rights Commission says the ongoing conflict in the country has led to more civil rights violations by armed groups. The head of the commission, Fandesia Charles Ladu, says even though rapes, robbery and killings have increased significantly, the commission was forced to close its offices in all South Sudan states due to lack of funding. Consequently, Ladu says the Human Rights Commission is unable to verify reports of violations across the country. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba.
At a Thursday news conference in Juba, Ladu commended the government for ensuring peaceful Christmas and New Year celebrations in Juba, noting there were no reports of gunshots or violence in the capital. Ladu is urging ministers of Interior, National Security and Defense to ensure security throughout the country so citizens can live in peace.
Such good security measures should extend beyond Juba and cover the whole country in order to reduce potential incidences of human rights abuses.
Ladu says human rights violations increase across the country after surge in violence between government forces and forces loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar in Juba in July. But the commission cannot follow up those reports.
Some of the violations that are related to conflict, like gender-based violence, became more. And then even movement of our staff to go down to investigate some of the violations also became a problem, because of lack of fund and because of also insecurity. So for us to get some reports from down, from the grassroots, became a problem.
The commissioner says a lack of funds forced the agency to close its branch offices in the capitals of the former 10 states. Ladu says funding the Human Rights Commission had received from the government and the UN agencies is now being diverted to pay for other priorities.
The approval of fund for the office also became also an issue. And then we used to work with some partners like the UNMIS. They used to give us support, financial support, but currently it seems like they changed their mandate. They are now focusing more on emergencies and protection of civilians rather than capacity building.
Lado says most human rights violations are committed by unknown gunmen. She says authorities must track down and arrest the perpetrators.
They are the ones killing people. They are the ones robbing people in the roads. And even they are the ones, raped, because we have the gender-based violence. We have the raping cases. And all is done by this unknown gunman. This is an issue now. You know, this unknown gunman is one of the major security issues facing people outside Juba and even within Juba in the town.
Commissioner Lado is urging the people of South Sudan to come forward and help them disseminate information in their communities about the human rights as is stipulated in the country's national laws. She says once those rights are publicized, the number of violations should fall.
When you know that you have rights and you know that there is law protecting your rights, then you will be able to challenge whoever is trying to violate those rights, or at least you can challenge anyone who is trying to violate somebody's rights in your presence.
Last September, a UN Commission on Human Rights called for the quick formation of the hybrid court to try perpetrators of abuses following the outbreaks of the conflict in South Sudan. A hybrid court has yet to be formed in the country. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. A South Sudan Army spokesman claimed today that American, British, and Norwegian government representatives met with SPLA-IO officials in Nairobi, Kenya, earlier this month to try to plot a regime change in South Sudan. South Sudan's deputy military spokesman, Colonel Santo Dominic Chol, says any such plan will fail because only the South Sudanese people have the power to change their leaders through democratic elections. The British government flatly denies the allegation. The British Embassy in Juba says an article that appeared in the East African newspaper was a fabrication. The U.S. so far has not commented on the allegations. Chol alleges that the participants at the meeting planned to use the country's economic crisis to effect regime change. The South Sudan Human Rights Commission says the ongoing conflict has led to more violations of rights of civilians. Commissioner Fidenzia Charles Ladu said in Juba today that rapes, robberies, and killings have increased significantly since July when a surge in violence occurred. She says a lack of funds has forced the South Sudan Human Rights Commission to close its offices in all 10 states, and as a result, she says her agency cannot verify reports of violations. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Seasons of Peace by W.J.
Now and forever. So, who's that girl? Anna W.J. was the king of Lokulili was Anna W.J. was Jehu them said Kapwana kele tumari Kali has kisi mubara mubara Imara quiz Imara matar Ya kwana o Finusu wanjani Mabirutu ahataraji Laki
We have been listening to WJ with the song Seasons of Peace. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.